Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage. We're talking all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. Want to remind you about a couple of other Daily Journal podcasts to look for. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi with Chris Kiefer and Derek Russell. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. And every Wednesday, check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs with Dalton Middleton and Brad Locke. So be sure to look for those podcasts wherever you go to search for those things. Logan, how are you, man?
I'm good. Kind of like we were discussing off air, Parrish. It seemed like Thursday got here quicker for me this week. Mississippi State bumped their usual Dan Mullen press conference, which is held on Monday. With the holiday this week, they used it on Tuesday, and my week's just kind of been thrown off ever since. But it is Thursday, and we're 2 days away from another game.
You know, I wish that they still had the press conferences on different days as opposed to every Monday. But, you know, people get used to the routine. Personally, you know, I like having the press conference on Monday. It gives you a chance to review the Saturday game when it's still somewhat fresh in the minds of a lot of people and look ahead too. But when you have it on Monday, though, that look ahead part for coaches is still kind of tough. They haven't gotten that deep into their preparation and film study and whatnot. But anyway, that's where we are. I'll tell you what, when State and Ole Miss both have the press conferences on the same day, that really takes a toll on the sports section in terms of the space and how the teams get played from week to week.
It does. And, you know, I remember those days back when I think it was Ed Ogeron always had his on Monday and Sylvester Croom had his on Tuesday. And the paper that I was at previously, I was actually able to go cover both. I would drive to Oxford on Monday and then I would drive to Starkville on Tuesday to cover that, and was able to kind of cover both teams. And on Saturday, when Saturday would roll around, I would cover whichever team had the better matchup that week. Was able to, I didn't cover a whole lot of Charleston Southern versus Mississippi State games. If that was the case on that weekend, I would try to cover whichever game had the better matchup.
Well, Logan, let's start with Mississippi State. Tell us about Charleston Southern and the Bulldogs. Obviously, it looked like a one-sided affair all the way around. I know you didn't get to see State much at all during camp, so a lot of this stuff was new. But from what I was able to get from the vibe of that game on Twitter as it was playing out, yes, it was a lopsided score, and you see that a lot in the SEC versus FCS game. But it sounded like maybe a different level of dominance for Mississippi State in that game.
It really was, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I wrote a column Monday. I've never seen as dominant of a defensive performance that I saw on Saturday at any level of football. Mississippi State only allowed 33 yards the whole game, and 19 of those came on the final drive. They only gave up two first downs. One of those came on the final drive of the game. It was pitched a shutout against Charleston Southern. Didn't even allow them to cross midfield. And I think that was the most telling stat, is they didn't even cross midfield the entire game. The closest they got was when Mississippi State punted the ball to them and they got the ball about the 40, and they still didn't cross midfield. So it was a lot of three and outs, two safeties put up by Mississippi State's defense. They only allowed 0.7 yards per play in the entire game. And it was just dominant. And it wasn't just like Mississippi State threw its starters out there and played them the entire game. I mean, they ran at least three waves of defensive players through there, especially in the second half. And, they finally started moving the ball on a bunch of walk-ons there at the end of the game and picked up 19 yards. So that's where 19 of those 33 yards came through. But it was dominant, and it was good to see. And you're right. I mean, you expect to see a SEC team, you know, when they play an FCS school, to be able to dominate the line of scrimmage in that way. But yeah, you go back to last year, Mississippi State gave up 627 yards. I forget, double digit first downs. I think it was close to 20 first downs, maybe even more than that. You know, 41 points to Samford last year. So, you know, you go back to last year's FCS game, and this year's is two totally different defensive performances. And you know, it was Todd Grantham's debut on that side of the ball. So it was encouraging to see. Now, I don't think Mississippi State's going to dominate SEC schools that same way on defense, but it was encouraging to see, especially as horrible as they were on defense last year. But you look on the offensive side of the ball, they got some things done on that side. Still got some work to do on the offensive line. Elkton Jenkins, it was his first game at center, had some trouble with some snaps. None of them hit the ground, but you know, Nick Fitzgerald had to reach around his ankles several times to get the play started. And that kind of just threw the timing off. And you could tell that in some of the plays that they had. But, you know, he didn't run the ball that much. You know, that's a big part of their game. He didn't impress me with his passing. You know, we talked a lot this offseason, and Mississippi State did as well, about improving his completion percentage, and just didn't see that. I think it was about 55% or so. You know, just really wasn't that great. You know, he missed a couple of passes, one of them to Justin Johnson, which would have been an easy touchdown, and he overshot him by about 10 yards over his head. So, I mean, he was streaking across the middle of the field. You know, nobody was even around him, and he just flat out overthrew him. But, you know, at the same time, you know, they got some young players onto the field. You know, 11 different receivers caught passes, that they got the tight ends involved in the passing game. And it was just an overall great start to the season. You know, especially, you know, last year losing to South Alabama to start the year off. Just put a sour taste in their mouth, and they're kind of playing catch up from that point on. But, you know, played well against Charleston Southern. They'll have to do it again this week at Louisiana Tech. But, you know, so far, so good.
Well, obviously, they dominated Charleston Southern up front, though. But, I mean, could you get a real read on Mississippi State's secondary? I mean, could Charleston Southern even get off enough plays to let them know how they were playing on the back end?
Not at all. I mean, they only attempted 8 passes the whole game. So, you know, don't really know a whole lot about – they were really good in run coverage. You know, they got up there, even some of the corners and safeties got up there and got tackles for losses. They had 9 tackles for loss, but only 1 sack, because they only dropped back 8 times during the game. So, really couldn't tell a whole lot about that. You'll know a lot more about them this week. Louisiana Tech loves to throw the football, and so that secondary is going to get tested a lot this year. But, you know, I think they've got some veterans back in the secondary this year. You know, they've started the season off without 2 starting corners last year, and played the whole season without one of them, and played half the season without one of them. So, you know, they've got Talando Cleveland back there now, and, you know, some of those younger corners and safeties got experience last year. So it's a much more mature secondary, but we'll have to kind of see how they do this weekend when they're tested for the first time.
Well, what was the vibe like after the game? Obviously, defense was such an issue at both of the schools we covered last year, Mississippi State, you know, as well as Ole Miss. But, you know, what was the feeling? I mean, you have to take it with a grain of salt to some degree, because it's the FCS game. But you went out and you did exactly what you wanted to do in this kind of game.
Talking to some of the defensive players, especially some of the ones that were around last year, They were very encouraged. You can just tell that they got their confidence back, and it was good to see. Yeah, they liked Todd Grantham's scheme. They really believed in it, but they weren't for sure. I mean, they hadn't been tested yet with that defense yet, and you know, when they go out there and they do exactly what he tells them to do, and they have that type of performance, you know, it gives them some motivation, you know, to continue to believe in what he's preaching to them. And I thought one thing that was very interesting that he said after the game, he said leading up to the game, Charleston Southern's a triple option team. And he said that he had his defense practicing without the ball. The scout team offense didn't have a football when they were running the option at him. He wanted the guy that was supposed to hit the quarterback to hit the quarterback, whether he had the ball or not. The pitch man hit the pitch man, whether he had the ball or not. And just each person take care of their individual responsibilities on each of those plays and hit you know, whoever it was, without whether they had the football or not, and it would work. And it did. You know, they didn't get anything off. Like I said, you know, pretty much the whole game they went with one first down, and you know, they were in negative yardage for a much of that, a majority of that football game. But it was very encouraging. Defensive line played extremely well. They got some depth at that spot, you know, those three line spots. It was just a dominant defensive performance as I've ever seen.
Well, Ole Miss has its FCS game Saturday at 11 a.m. against Tennessee Martin. The last time UTM came to Oxford was 2015. Ole Miss won that game 76-3. I'm not expecting that level of dominance in this game. But I'll tell you, Logan, you know, the FCS game and whether or not it should even be played has been a topic of discussion for a long time. A lot of people will look at the SEC and say, oh, that's weak scheduling when you have that game. I like the FCS game for several reasons. I don't like to cover it, but I know that it's a long and grueling schedule within the conference. You get one open date. You're going to play 12 games. And the FCS game, now your coaches are not going to tell you this, okay, but it can be a game where you can rest some people. It often turns into a game where the SEC team gets the big lead, as Mississippi State does. You can pull out your starters. You can get experience for others. It's also, when you consider off the field, it's a time that that kids and families who don't ordinarily get to go to a game and get inside the stadium and see things like that. You know, lots of times those are the people who can make it to the FCS game. If the school itself is going to have some tickets left over that it can use in different ways and maybe bring in some groups like that, you know, this is going to be the game. So there is some benefit to this game. Now there's more benefit, I think, when it comes later on the schedule than it's coming right now. Mississippi State having its game last week and Ole Miss this week. But, you know, that's just what it is. When it does come earlier in the schedule, as it has for these teams, then you know maybe you use it to get a look at your younger players and you can kind of ease them into a four-year college schedule as opposed to opening up with a big Power Five opponent. So there are benefits to this FCS game, and I think you're going to continue to see teams like this on the schedule. Ole Miss opens up with a 47-27 win over South Alabama last week. Not an FCS team, but, you know, a middling group of five opponent from the Sun Belt Conference, a team that was 6-6 in the regular season and reached a bowl game last year, a team that won at Mississippi State. We've talked about that, but also won at San Diego State when that was a ranked opponent on the road that the Jags were able to defeat. So, you know, a fair opponent for Ole Miss, and I thought that opening game went about as well as it could go for the Rebels. Lots of energy on defense, lots of eyes on this defense too, people wanting to see if Ole Miss will be improved. And honestly, what you saw in that first game was a defense that needs some work. You could see some improvement from last year's team that gave up almost 250 rushing yards a game. I thought defensive line play with the starters was very good. Josiah Cotney, who was one of the surprise players of camp, was the best defensive lineman in the game. He had five tackles. He had two tackles for loss, and they came on back-to-back plays when South Alabama had driven to the Ole Miss two. And Cotney comes up with a couple of TFLs there. And on third down, the Rebels get a big stick from Cedric Woods, the safety, and a pass breakup. And all of a sudden, the Jags have driven 95 yards, but they have to settle for a short field goal. So a good stop there. But there was a big drop-off between that first team Ole Miss defense and the second team and the reserves that came in. You know, the Rebels got three and outs on the first two South Alabama series, you know, feeling good, got off to a good start. They were ahead 10-0. Then all of a sudden, South Alabama takes over at its two and drives 95 yards and did it rather easily against a group of defensive line reserves that started that possession. By the time the Jaguars were in the red zone, the Ole Miss starters were back in the game and they forced a short field goal. So a good start for the defense. still trying to see, how this team is going to cover the pass. That was kind of a mixed bag of results against South Alabama. The Jags scored on a 30-yard touchdown pass when their receiver, a first-year junior college transfer, was pretty open. Rest of the time, there was some good coverage and some good plays made in the secondary. But the big thing is tackling. That was not as good as they want it to be, and something that certainly the Rebels need to improve on against Tennessee Martin. Offensively, a huge game for A.J. Brown at wide receiver. 8 catches, a school record 233 yards, 2 touchdowns. He becomes the first player in Ole Miss history to have 2 catches for over 70 yards in the same game. And the thing is, that could have been A.J. Brown or D.K. Metcalf. Either one of those guys is capable of that kind of game. It happened to be Brown. I think DeMarcus Lodge is going to do some good things this year, but to have that kind of monster game that Brown had, I think that's going to be Brown or Metcalf, because what separates them from the other Ole Miss receivers is going to be the ability to break tackles, the yards after contact, and that was something that Brown did on both of his long touchdown plays. Shea Patterson, a nice start for him. 80% completion percentage, 28 out of 35, 4 touchdowns. The big thing, no turnovers, no fumbles, no interceptions. It's been a while since Ole Miss has had a quarterback who has really protected the football. I thought Shea Patterson did this well last year in 3 starts. He had 6 touchdown passes, 3 interceptions, and 2 of them really I didn't think were his fault. I thought receivers could have done a better job of batting the ball away. One was just bobbled in the air. I mean, I thought he did a good job of protecting the ball last year. I thought that carried over this year in the season opener. So that's Ole Miss against South Alabama. Logan, looking ahead as Mississippi State goes to Louisiana Tech, where do you think the Bulldogs need to improve? Where do they need to be better in week 2?
They need to be better on the offensive line. I kind of mentioned that earlier. Elkton Jenkins at center needs to hit Nick Fitzgerald in the number, when he snaps the ball. So he's not going to have to, dive around his knees or his ankles to secure the football and then, turn around and look up and try to start making his reads at that point. He's going to have to, improve his snapping. And then at right tackle, Stuart Reese, who's a redshirt freshman, made his first start this past Saturday, had a couple of false starts, and that was at home. So, obviously, going on the road to Louisiana Tech, not going to be just a huge crowd like what you see in the SEC quite a bit, but, going to be a hostile environment, no doubt. And, he's going to have to make that adjustment. He's going to have to mature. You can't have those pre-snap penalties if you want to keep ahead of the chains on offense. But, yeah, it's really the only 2 areas. And, like I said, the mystery of the secondary on defense is still out there. You don't really know what you have in pass defense. But, so what I saw, from the run defense, it was very, very good. Obviously facing a completely different style of offense this week. Louisiana Tech loves to throw the football. They put up a lot of points. They beat Northwestern State 52-24 last week. They had a high-powered offense last year. Got a quarterback from Meridian Parish, Jamar Smith, a guy that Mississippi State recruited early on in his high school career, ends up at Louisiana Tech. And, this is his first year to kind of really be the starter. I think he drew 1 start last year. So he's a guy that Mississippi State coaches and staff are very familiar with. They played Louisiana Tech a few times over the years. They played them twice since Dan Mullen's been there. One of those games took overtime here in Starkville a few years ago, and then in 2015, Mississippi State won pretty handedly, but Louisiana Tech still scored some points in that ball game as well. So, it's an environment that I've been to before. Back in 2008, Mississippi State, I think, was the first SEC team to ever go to Ruston to play a game. And to start off that 2008 season, Jamar Chaney breaks his leg in that game. Mississippi State loses. They open the season. The first writing on the wall for Sylvester Croom, that it's going to be the end. And obviously it ended very sourly in 2008 as well with a 45-0 loss in the Egg Bowl. So that was kind of the first indication that was going to be the last season for Sylvester Croom, going to Louisiana at a Tech and losing. And, you know, I'm kind of curious to see, because they've made a lot of improvements to their stadium since 2008. And I'm interested to go see, because the first trip that I made there, it was kind of it was almost like a high school environment. You know, they had big, the stadium's kind of sunk in, and they had two berms in the end zones, and there was kids rolling down the berms, and they were throwing those little plastic footballs up into the stands and stuff. It had kind of a feel of a high school game. So I'm ready to see some of the improvements that they've made there and kind of see what the atmosphere is like in Rogan.
Well, I will tell you this, Logan, just from following along on social media, I know they have a new press box, which is always important for us. So I think that's going to be a nice thing for you there. Two other things, man, when you're going through on I-20 there, you get off at Monroe, you could check out Johnny's Pizza or Dankin Trail Barbecue, man. It'd be worth your time. Let's talk a little bit about the Rebels and what to expect for Ole Miss against Tennessee Martin, where they need to improve. Three things I'd like to see Ole Miss do better in week two. Number one, run the football better. I think that there are high expectations for Jordan Wilkins. He looks good, eager, hungry, all that. He was just okay in the first game. Wasn't really anything beyond average. And he had a fumble as well that led to a touchdown for South Alabama. Phil Longo, first-year offensive coordinator, kind of downplayed the running game earlier this week and said, well, part of the reason that or part of the way the run game is evaluated is how it helps this offense create opportunities downfield. And I get that. But if you're going to hand it off, you need to get more than 3.5 yards a carry. Devon Penniman, the sophomore, the number two back, came in, did a little bit better. I averaged almost 5 yards a carry. I had a nice 13-yard run, scored on a 2-yard touchdown run. So we'll see what Ole Miss gets from its backs. There's some hidden yardage in that run game as well, with the way they were giving the ball to the backs a couple of times with a little shovel pass, and one of those netted about 15 yards for Jordan Wilkins. So there always will be that with this offense. But bottom line, this team is going to need to run the ball better. We'll see how they do that against Tennessee Martin. Also, I mentioned tackling earlier. You can have as much energy as you want, and you can get a lot of people to the football. Wes McGriff calls it populate the football. He says we populated the football pretty well. I like that, Logan. You know, as you know, these coaches, they bring in their own cliches, and this previously has been called gang tackling. But the bottom line is, Ole Miss had people around the football most of the time. It's not going to happen every time, and scholarship players need to make scholarship plays, and sometimes that's going to involve a solo tackle. So Ole Miss needs to tackle better this week. They need to cut out some of that secondary yardage that South Alabama was getting with some of its run game. The other thing, you know, Shea Patterson, it's hard to complain about a guy that completes 80% of his passes, but Patterson needs to be a little bit more poised early in the game this week. I think he will. That was his first start as the man against South Alabama. He started 3 games last year, but he was the understudy. He was the guy coming in to finish the season after the ACL tear by Chad Kelly early in November. He did a good job of that. Now it's his team, and there's no doubt about that. I thought he was a little amped up early. He missed a couple of receivers high, and that certainly is not the way you want to miss them, because that often leads to interceptions, but they did not this time. And also, you know, Logan, I had some people, you know, talk to me about that on Twitter when I said he needed to be more accurate. They would point out that he completed 80%, and that's a good argument there, but accuracy and completion percentage are not always the same thing. And there were several times that Patterson completed passes, but he had thrown behind the receiver. The receiver was having to make some type of big adjustment to make the catch. And when it works out that way, it limits what the receiver can do after the catch. It gives the defense time to close and really kind of, you know, it hinders the play. So I think Shea Patterson himself would tell you that he would like to place the ball to receivers better. So we'll see if he can do that in week two. Hey, folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. We thank you for clicking in and being a part of the program. Remember, check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi. That's with Derek Russell and Chris Kiefer every Wednesday and Friday. We're happy to have Brad Locke back as part of the sports staff. And also check out Prep Rally, all things high school sports. That one does include Brad Locke as well as Dalton Middleton. And Logan and I will be back here with you next week for another edition of Double Coverage.